that you must do when you're starting out is take advice and mentorship. That's good. That's what differentiates a lot of successful startups from a not so successful startup.
Hello and welcome to the Indian Startup Show. I'm Neil Patel. I'm joined today by my special guest, Tanul Mishra. Hello, Tanul.
Hey, Neil. It's great to be on the show today.
Tanul is the CEO of Afonia Labs. Afonia Labs focuses on early stage startups in fintech and provides them with a trusted ecosystem to grow and succeed. She talks about what startups should be focusing on and what they are looking for. She also reflects on her time as the co-founder of Eatlish, a successful food service that is a bridge between artisan food makers from across India and consumers. She also talks about surviving the early days, breakthrough moments, and an interesting story about pickles and sorting things out over a cup of hot chocolate and much, much more. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. How did this accelerator get started and how things are going?
So we've officially launched about 2 months ago. We've created an ecosystem where, you know, we're looking at this in a couple of ways. So one is an ecosystem where a startup needs services that they can utilize. So as a founder, you would really want to focus on your product, on giving that out, because that's really the purest joy when you're working on a startup. But you need allied services to support. So what we've done is we've partnered with, you know, patent experts, technology companies, communication firms, designing firms, which are there for the startups to use. So that's like your basic services that you can rely on. Mm-hmm. We've got partnerships with people like AWS, who will help provide hosting services. F6, the accelerator, is powering our applications. The other thing that we want to focus on with the Indian ecosystem is, just because you're an Indian startup, it doesn't really mean that, you know, you can't work globally. So we've worked and built a list of mentors who are from different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of focus of mentors coming in from the US. The goal of the mentors is to help the startups look at their business, help them in areas which could be weak, or there could be a void. So it could be in terms of product shaping, it could be in terms of opening markets, regulatory, because it's fintech. And then what we've done is we've got associate partners. So associate partners are essentially, venture capitalist fund companies who partnered with us, and they have a look at the companies as we board them. And as an incubator, you're really a bridge between the startup and the rest of the ecosystem that they need to leverage.
Mm-hmm. So, why do a fintech incubator then?
So there's been a huge push from the government on digital transactions, and there's a lot of action in that space in India. I worked for a fintech company around 2009 and spent, close to three and a half years working on a lot of fintech solutions. The one thing that I realized is that there are a lot of cogs in the wheels, and it's a space where you have to work with corporates, banks, regulators, and the regulators are across. So you've got the RBI, you've got the IRDA, you've got the SEBI. So it's very hard for a startup to keep focus on all this. And I think that as an incubator, if we focus on this space, we can, you know, help the startups better and also get the ground ready for what's going to come in, say, 2 to 3 years.
Great. And can you give me examples of, you know, what people are building? Any exciting startups so far?
So excitement can be in two ways: a great product or the approach to market. And one of the startups that we've incubated is a payment processing startup, but their focus is going to be working with, milk farmers, self-help groups, and help reduce the dependency on cash there. Mm-hmm. And process payments. So that's one segment they're looking at. The second startup that we have is actually working on blockchain and is looking at working on ways where they can anonymize surveys.
I suppose you've got the most important job of how do you actually identify the startups that get into this incubator?
Okay, super question. So
no pressure.
It's no pressure at all. So the thing is that when we look at the startups, as an incubator, we're also looking at startups which are in proof of concept stage, MVP stage, or you could have an idea on paper. In the absence of having transactions, right, the one thing that we focus on is the idea first. What's the market segment that you're looking at? And most importantly, for us, it is the startup, the team at the startup and the founder, mm-hmm. where we put a lot of weightage. Because, you know, it's the team and the founder which have the vision and which is going to get this into execution. So these are the three things that we look at. Is when we meet a founder and, you know, I have a look at it and the team has a look at it. And we do our first round of evaluation, which typically maps out what are their strengths, what are the void areas, how's the idea, is there competition, what's the value they're adding to the existing solutions, you know, is it just a me too, how are you going to differentiate yourself, what's the problem you're solving. After this, you know, fintech is huge. So you could be payment processing, you could be an insurtech company, you could be a lending company, you could be in microfinance. So we have our mentors who are there from different spaces and different areas of expertise. So we actually run our, you know, the presentations, the idea, and the founders and calls with these mentors. Basis this, we have a second round of evaluation, and then there's also a round of technical evaluation that we do with our mentors. Mm-hmm. After this, the most important question that we ask ourselves is, what is the value that we will add to the startups as an incubator? You know, what's the difference we're going to make to their lives? How are we going to get them to their goals faster? And once we've got the answer to all these questions is when we actually go ahead and incubate mm-hmm. the startup. We work on a tiny percentage of equity with these startups.
Mm-hmm. So it must be, you know, an exciting feeling telling people that they've been accepted.
Yes. The hard part is saying, no, you've not been accepted.
Oh. I mean, can solo founders apply then?
Oh, no, we're open to solo founders applying. You know, as long as as an entrepreneur, I always think it's better to have a co-founder, but we're okay with single co-founders, no problem.
And what about like fintech startups around the world? Or does it have to be, they have to be from India?
No, we're very happy to look at fintech startups from any part of the world who are actually looking to come and work into India.
Mm-hmm. And obviously you've been doing it for 2 months. What's been the biggest insight so far?
You know, there's been different areas. And I think the biggest insight has been that when you look at so my view of the startup system was very colored as an entrepreneur. So I would look at everything from an entrepreneur and a startup founder perspective. And I think that's a huge change when you look at things from the other side, right? I realize how much we all love our ideas. So I think that, you know, getting flexible co-founders and startup founders is hard.
So when you're interviewing these people, can you tell if they're making stuff up or not? You know, do you have like a BS detector?
it's hard to detect it at the first conversation, but as you dig deeper, right, you know. But most founders, I haven't come across anyone really, you know, fibbing on numbers or technology. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Okay, let's talk about you then. You know, sure. Tell me of a story about, you know, how you got into entrepreneurial life.
So I worked in media, telecom, and you know, payments. While I was at Paymate, I trek, and I went for a trek 1 year, and I was sitting, and I was like, I've always wanted to do something on my own, so why not now? Mm-hmm. And with that epiphany, I just quit my job and I said, this is what I want to work in. But I was very clear that I wanted to work in the food space. The idea was that, you know, in India, when all of us are this, you know, segment is kind of different in the sense, most people travel, they're well exposed. But when you want to cook something at home, you invariably turn to the recipes from your grandmothers and aunts and usually the family recipes. So we started Eatalish with the thought of starting an online food magazine, which actually documents this journey. Mm-hmm. During the course, we realized and met a lot of artisanal food makers, and we saw that they weren't able to keep pace and get their products available on the shelves of large supermarkets or specialized stores. And we started evaluating what are the challenges. And one was just the general business sense, and that's not what their focus is. Two, packaging. You know, in the packaging of Indian food wasn't really sexy. And so when you decided to look at something, you know, that's not what people were turning to. So keeping that in mind, we, you know, built Eatalish out as a model to source artisanal food products from different parts of India. And these were regional specialties. So spices, condiments, and snacks from north, south, east, west, central India. And we were retailing them across 32 stores with, you know, partners such as Nature's Basket, Gourmet West, Food Hall, Amazon, our own website. And, you know, it was interesting in the sense that there's some stuff you just don't, you know, plan for. So we decided that our first box was, we were doing boxes and, you know, each box would have four or five elements in it. Something which is a do-it-yourself recipe, something you could consume. And our first box was a mango box. And we were, we did different kinds of mango pickles from different regions. And we did what's a mango drink called ampanam. So it's basically you could roast the mangoes, you could boil the mangoes. And, you know, we gave like a special spice mix to go with that. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the fun thing. We also decided that we want to give you raw mangoes with each box to make this. And we got our first order. We packed and we were great to go. And then we land up at the logistic company and they look at us and say, oh, but your box weighs 5 kilos. So the cost of shipping would have been so much more than what we were selling the box at.
Mm-hmm.
Something we just didn't think, you know. And then we had to play a game of Tetris right there to make sure that we got the cost down.
Interesting
so,
stuff. What would you say was the breakthrough moment then?
So the breakthrough moment for us was when we actually partnered with Nature's Basket. Which is a large gourmet store chain in the country. It's a company by Godrej. And when they agreed to take our brand in and be the artisanal brand retailing out of their stores, that I think was the big breakthrough for us.
Good stuff. Looking back, what were the early days like? What were the most challenging bits?
Lots of them. We were bootstrapped, so you were always struggling to figure the decision between critical and important. The second bit was packaging in India is hard because the market is really geared towards scale. So if you want to look at anything, you need to look at ordering like in lakhs. And for us, that was a challenge because we were just growing. So figuring and, you know, taking our way through that, that was, you know, the food industry is regulated and we were working with artisanal food makers. So just that whole part of training them, getting the best practices adopted by them.
It must have been quite challenging because obviously, you know, you quit your job. You know,
right.
Must have been quite well paid as well to do this.
Yes. Yes, it was. That's why I said because the journey would have been harder if not for Shipra, my co-founder. Because it is, so the business itself, yes, is challenging when you're working on stuff, but it's almost like, you know, emotionally, it's extremely, it's like a roller coaster, right? Some days you're on this big high and then something happens and then, you know, there's a slump. And there are times when you come close to looking at it and saying, do we need to shut down? Do we need to push? And that's when you really, you know, need a co-founder.
Any sort of examples of where you've messed up?
Oh yeah, lots of them, man. When you're doing a business, if you don't mess things, you're not doing something right. So you know, we did pickles, and one of the pickles that you get in a state in Jharkhand is a red chili pickle.
Uh-huh.
But it's got tons of oil in it. Okay, so when we tried to package it, we really thought we'll do these beautiful glass jars and we'll put them in that, and we packed around 40 kgs of pickles only to realize that they have leaked all over the jars and labels.
No.
So not just the labels which were damaged, but also think of the mess we had to clean up and getting that.
How did that make you feel?
Awful. Like, we were like, why did we not think of fixing this first? What was so... But we learned.
You're probably thinking, why did I just stay in my job?
Yes, that too. Like, tell me again, why did I pick this business? Why not just do something simpler?
Good stuff. You mentioned your co-partner. How do you... What is the story of how you met?
So we were both working at Paymate. She was looking at marketing, and I was leading revenue. And we were close colleagues. We got on well. We would end up trapped. So at Paymate, there were a lot of rural projects that I worked on. And because she was looking at marketing, we ended up working closely. And when I decided to, you know, look at this, I mean, she's the one person I thought of. So, it was fantastic. She brought in the product expertise, the creative bent, and I brought in the business side of it.
Mm-hmm. What was the discussion around, you know, starting a business and quitting?
Oh, actually, very interesting. So she had already quit Paymate. And I was planning to do this, and I'd had my conversations, and then I picked up the phone and called her one day, and I said, "Hey, I'm planning to do a food business. Do you think you want to be a part? What are you doing? Do you want to be a part of it?" She said, "Sure." I mean, you know, she's equally passionate about food, so she said, "Sure, very happy to do. What are we doing?" I was like, "This is what I'm thinking," and then we just kind of built the idea together.
So, how did you sort of like separate the tasks then? Because obviously you never sort of worked together.
Started difficult. Off as a team. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. So see, when we started off, the lines are really blurred because you're just two people who are actually building the physical model out, right? And so both of us were involved in a lot of aspects, but as the company grew, we were aware of what each of us is doing, but both of us have our strengths and which are not in similar areas. So that kind of helped. So Shipra's the creative, marketing, strong on product size. I'm the more, let's get this deal done. How do we expand on business? You know, what are the books looking like? So in that sense, it was extremely easy for us to work through. But there's a couple of things that we did. One is we very open communication channels. We would discuss everything. So even if it's a creative idea and she would, you know, say, "Hey, what do you think of this?" And if it's a business thing, I would say, "Hey, what do you think of this?" Both of us have a very similar value system. So, you know, like if you put us in two separate rooms and ask the same question, I think, you know, the answers would be, similar. The other thing that we did is that there are obviously disagreements, but we always kept the interest of the company above personal interests. Mm-hmm. And we would go and sort it over a hot chocolate.
if in doubt, drink hot chocolate. Yeah.
Yes.
What, I'm interested to know, what was the main disagreement then?
Oh, you know, there were no main disagreements, you know, but like just when you're looking at something like when we were launching. So I'm the let's do this, we'll figure version 1.1, 1.2 later, right? And she's more like, let's think this through. And let's do this. So the website was ready and we wanted to launch. And, you know, I was like, let's get it out tomorrow. And she was like, let's do this with a couple of people and then do slow. So those are the kind of things. And then you kind of come to an arrangement where it makes sense for both of us because there's value in both.
And sort of talk about the steps about hiring then. When you decide to like start, you know, growing the team, as it were.
So the first thing, so initially we were actually doing everything, right, from sourcing we were actually sitting and doing the packing of the products ourselves too when we started. And the first staff that we looked at hiring was somebody who would take care of the packaging. So when you get the products from the vendors, that whole process of checking, weighing, quality, repackaging if required, labeling, all that kind of thing. So that was the first staff. And then we've always opted for like a lean team. So our strategy was to look at somebody who would look at operations and sales. And then because we had stores in different cities, we had products in different cities out of stores, you had to actually go and check, you know, where are they placed? How are they doing? So we had a couple of people in each region. So we would look for people who are, excited about working on food, are willing to push the envelope, and communication skills.
Is that still going, the startup?
Yes, it actually, we exited. We got bought out, and that's how Aftonia happened.
Oh, okay. Tell me about the story about how we got bought out then.
Okay, so Shipra's, the business was pretty much on its own. We're across 32 stores, our vendor, we keep sourcing new products. So it's a very stable business. The processes are very strong because we had to make sure food has seasonality, peak seasons. You need to make sure that your processes are super strong. So we had two things we had going for us. One is reach in terms of the stores and distribution pipeline. And two is a strong base of artisanal vendors where the products are hard to replicate because they were regional specialties. So there was somebody, who is running a food business in the U.S. and wanted to look at doing this in India. And they were looking out for a company to acquire who would be doing both. And they kind of approached us, and that's how it got done. And both of us, when it came to us, we both looked at each other and said, do we really want to sell it? And we said no. And then both of us came back and said, no, I think it's the right time to do this. And it was ready to be handed over to somebody who would take it to the next level.
Yeah, you must have been excited or emotional.
Yes. We were excited and emotional both. Excited because, you have created value and somebody else is acknowledging that value.
Yeah, definitely.
Somebody sees that value in it and is willing to pay a price for that.
Yeah. Was it tough to walk away from that startup then, do you think?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. First startup, first baby, 7 years of toiling. It was hard. It was hard. But, we knew it's for the best.
Do you ever, go on the website just to check out what's going on?
Oh, I just ordered some stuff.
You can't let go.
Yeah, I do. And as a matter of fact, they just got featured among the top 10 promising startups.
So this is an American company, but they've...
They wanted an operation in India, so it's an India-based company now. Okay. Okay. So they just bought us. It's a gentleman who's bought us out. Mm-hmm. So he's gone with the company. The company structure stays the same.
So, because obviously most startups do fail, but you've got this is a success story.
Yes.
How does that make you feel?
Fantastic and lucky.
And lucky, okay. So if anyone's going through the same thing, what advice would you give them? If someone's got a startup for 3 or 4 years and someone's offered them a decent amount of money.
Okay, so the thing is, and I always believe that as an entrepreneur, you must know when you don't have any more to give your company. And also look at it and see if that person... So you don't want to sell to somebody just because somebody's willing to buy you out. You want to look at the person and say, is this person going to take the company where I think it's going to be the next level, or is it going to be a similar vision? And if it's a yes to those questions and you think that that's the ultimate, then that's you should definitely sell. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, for us, that was a very clear decision when we looked at the passion that they had. We looked at the kind of things that they wanted to do with the business. We were like, this is the best possible outcome for the startup,
That's a good answer. Last few questions then.
Sure.
So what's in your opinion, what's the one thing, you want people to know about startup life in India?
It's like startup life anywhere else. It's equally chaotic, but the scale is completely different. So it's very necessary that if you want to do something in India, you get your focus in terms of how you want to scale your business. Do you want to look at a narrowing deep, or do you want to spread yourself wide? The other thing is most startups in India are B2C focused. So, everyone's looking at selling directly to the customer. The focus on B2B is just about evolving. So that I think is a huge difference between startups elsewhere and in India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. And what frustrates you most about startup life? Anything you want to get off your chest?
Oh, the unpredictability. Because, one day, no 2 days are similar. But that's what I enjoy the most about it too.
If someone's listening to this and they sort of want to get into a fintech startup, or want to start a fintech startup, what advice would you give them?
So fintech startup anywhere in the world?
Yeah.
Figure your regulations. It's the first step.
And would you in the future go back to doing a startup, or are you happy doing what you're doing at the moment?
I'm happy doing what I'm doing at the moment. I think that I'm at a stage where, it's time for me to transfer those learnings. And, whatever I was challenging in the support system in India to, make sure that the startups get that. But I always say never Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah. So on reflection then, would you change anything?
Yes. In you're talking about Eclish, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
definitely. So you know, when we started, we were very clear that we want to focus on building the product out. And, you know, we would look at the PR and the communication aspect of it later, and the business will kind of, you know, if you're good, that's going to get taken care of. In hindsight, I think that, you know, both need to go hand in hand. You've got to tell your story to the world to get that traction faster.
Okay. And do you have any hobbies or interests?
Actually, three of them. Trekking.
Okay.
I practice a self-defense a self-defense unarmed combat called Krav Maga. Mm-hmm. And I used to be a classical dancer.
Okay, nice. And do you have any heroes or people you admire?
Yes, Bachindri Pal, the first Indian woman to summit the Everest.
Oh, wow. I suppose there's so many people going to Everest these days.
Yes, it's painful to watch that.
Are you fancy going up there one day?
So the thing is that, you know, it's mixed emotions because it's getting really crowded and I don't know if I want to contribute to that. But Everest is always alluring.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. And do you have any books or blogs you recommend to our listeners?
Calvin and Hobbes. It's great for entrepreneurial journey. He's a young kid who's got a really, really interesting perspective in life.
And have you got any sort of, because obviously you've launched a startup and you're sort of advising other startups to launch. Any sort of simple advice on, you know, launching a startup?
One thing that you must do when you're starting out is take advice and mentorship. That's good. That's what differentiates a lot of successful startups from a not so successful startup.
So, I mean, obviously you provide mentorship. What's the main question that people ask you then?
How can I get funding?
Okay. and the answer is?
Do you need funding?
Okay.
No, so on a serious note, no, I do ask that question saying, why do you need the funding? Because funding is not the ultimate, benchmark of success. So, yes, but, you know, I tell them saying, if depending on the startup, we give advice on how they can get funding.
You must get a lot of pitches then.
Yes, we do.
Anything that you look for? Any advice you can give our listeners on what should go in the pitch deck and what should they be presenting and stuff like that?
So, attention span is really short. So a couple of things is right there. What's the problem you're solving? How are you doing it better than anybody else who's doing it? Okay. And what are your team strengths? And that's it. These are the two things you need to get out there right at the beginning.
Okay. Last question then. If people want more information on Aftonia Labs and yourself, what must they do?
They need to visit aftonialab.com or they can reach us at Aftonia.
Tanul, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me over, Neil.
Awesome stuff. Thank you. Thanks to Tanul for coming on the show today. Thank you for listening and supporting the podcast. I shall be back next week. If you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or you can tweet at IndianStartupSH, or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. Love to connect. I would love some feedback on the show, especially on the music as well. And so check out the show notes for more information. Thank you and goodbye.